Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we're going to talk to Todd Weissman. Todd made the short film Army of God that we showed at Film Invasion LA in 2016. Army of God is just an incredibly well-made film. It's good in every possible way. So, of course, I'm urging you to watch it first. You can watch it at discoverfilm.net. And then after you've seen it, you can listen to Todd and find out a lot more about the film. And if you're expecting a film with God in the title to be controversial, well, I guess it is. But let's talk to Todd, and afterwards I'll talk about the controversial stuff.
My background began in Tampa, Florida, where I'm from. I used to film the high school fights after school and charge people to come watch them because...
Wait a minute, you set up your own backyard... boxing, like fights. UFC kind of vibe?
I didn't set up the fights. No, the fights would just happen all the time. And, you know, everyone would know when and where. So we would show up. I would show up with the school video camera and film the fights.
It doesn't sound like faculty could have approved.
Oh, hell no. No.
So, wow, that's something. That's entrepreneurial.
Yeah, it was fun. And then, you know, made a lot of little horror films with my buddies. And I started doing that when I was about 8. And then I was the church videographer. At the same time, I was the fight videographer, which is pretty funny. And along the way, I decided I wanted to go to film school. And then we had a great, like, little morning show TV program in my high school, which really got me started. Got into NYU Film School, you know, despite all the people in Tampa telling me that wasn't going to be a possibility.
Were they just being negative, or?
There was a lot of negativity. Yeah. Everybody's like, you know, that's for rich kids and that's for people whose parents are in the industry and they spend all this money on their submission films. And I shot my submission film with my friends in a trailer park. I didn't live in a trailer park, but it was your typical like high school movie about a drug dealer called The Backpack, and he gives it up at the end. And then somehow they let me in. So then I went to NYU 2005. So I'm not that young, 30. I met who's my current business partner, Milo Silver, and we started Hayden Five because we started calling ourselves Hayden Five because we lived on the Hayden Hall dorm on the 5th floor. And we started producing everybody else's short films, making our own, and sort of started hustling towards the end of college. I became a music video director, doing a lot of rap videos. My first big video was a Joel Santana Dipset video that was on BET and stuff like that. And we started, we went out and shot some spec commercials and then, graduated. And we had done some short film, you know, a bunch of short films.
So you started that entrepreneurial stuff while you were still an undergrad film student.
Yeah.
And so by the time you graduated, you were already rolling.
Well, it was a slow roll for sure.
Slow roll.
But we finished in 2008 and graduated officially 2009. So the economy was in the tank and everyone wanted short form branded content for cheap. The big boy production companies, you know, the Radical Medias, the Believes of the world, they didn't want to do, you know, little tiny jobs for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 grand. They wanted to do, you know, they did big broadcast spots for a million plus. So a market emerged at that time. And us as Hayden Five, you know, we had a decent enough reel to start going after some of these smaller branded jobs. So we were doing that along with music videos and honestly, whatever we could get our hands on.
To film school grads, that's real money. That's a real budget.
Oh yeah, man. So, I mean, in the beginning, you know, the first couple of years it was tough, you know, and we got our first office like a year later for $500 a month. And just started hustling. And somewhere along the way, we started a side business called Man with a Cam, which is a staffing company, which today is our primary revenue generator. where all of our full-time staff is at. And Man with a Cam staffs video crews all around the world. And now Hayden 5 has just sort of...
In any kind of video production, or are you talking music video?
No, it's never music videos, never broadcast spots, never movies. We're staffing ENG type crews for, you know, we'll do like the remote shoots for the Today Show, or we'll do thousands of shoots. A lot of it is experiential marketing videos. It's talking heads. It's some of it's very boring. Some of it's very cool. And we're, you know, deploying local crews in every major city across the United States and some international cities.
Right. And, so crew people know if they sign up with you, you can send work their way.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, there's a pretty extreme vetting process to get into our system. And then if you are, you know, a very skilled videographer, sound mixer, field producer, makeup artist, right, and we have an opportunity in your city, then we'll start bringing you onto jobs. And we've established, you know, we've been doing this for a while, so we've established relationships with our core teams in these different cities and always, you know, like to give new people opportunities. But the whole, you know, premise of our service is guaranteeing quality crew, quality product. And we handle the payroll, the insurance, workers' comp, all that stuff through our main system. And so Man with a Cam over the years has become a company that's allowed us now to, you know, to focus in more on, you know, some extracurricular fun films. And then we've had some successes with other shorts in the past and now recently more in the feature space. So my first short that put us on the map a little bit was called The Exit Room, starring Christopher Abbott, who's a phenomenal actor. And that premiered Tribeca and then Telluride and did a whole little circuit in 2013. And then I guess our most recent stuff is Lightning Face, starring Oscar Isaac, which we produced. And then a couple of short documentaries, We Live This and Revolving Doors. We did George in the Vacuum with Fred Armisen. We've been able to work with some really great talent for short films. And now have ventured into the feature space. With our latest project being Long Shot, the documentary on Netflix about a wrongfully accused man of murder with a twist of Larry David.
Is it a story that you guys found and took to Netflix?
So our director is a fellow filmmaker from NYU who we had worked on another short with. And then he found this story on the IMDb page of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and it's a fun fact on there. So we found about 5 years ago, and we started the process of making the film. Took us several years to get it all to, you know, in a self-financed way, like shoot the interviews, get the stars to align, which ultimately was at the end was HBO, Major League Baseball, and Netflix, and not to mention some parts of the Los Angeles criminal justice system and a whole bunch of people. It's a crazy story. I'm excited for you to see it. And it's out. It's been out for a few weeks now on Netflix. And that premiered also at Telluride.
And I'm sorry, could you repeat the title for me?
Long Shot.
Long Shot. All right, geez, I'll watch it on Netflix. I'll watch it soon.
Awesome. Awesome. And so we're equally passionate about docs and narrative films. Just looking for good stories. So that's one that was truly a passion project that we got really lucky to work with Netflix on. And they've been fantastic.
Right. And when you put together your own project that you or one of your partners is, I assume you're not the only director involved. Well, because you mentioned another director.
Milos and I were producers on that movie, along with the director, Jacob Amendola, and another producer, Mary Beth Minthorn, who's awesome. She works on a lot of like the Safdie brother films and stuff like that.
Right. But I was just thinking, obviously you have really great crew contacts.
Oh, for sure.
So when you sit down to do something like Army of God, I mean, did you even have to search, or were you just pulling the people you already knew who you thought would be great?
Yeah, it's definitely just reaching into the pool of great people that we've gotten to work with over the years. And then, we like to mix it up. We worked with, we worked with a new production designer on that. Brian O'Carroll's a DP that we had worked together on a Samsung commercial at one point, but I had really wanted to work with him on a movie. And so he jumped in and, they shot it, did a great job.
Right. Well, tell me, so Army of God, obviously a political film, was that the inspiration? Were you watching the primaries and getting inspired, or tell me where the idea came from?
That idea came from hearing over and over. I got really pissed off about how Muslims in general were being just sort of categorized as the only kind of terrorist. And being a student of history, I know that not to be true. Domestic terrorism in the United States, can be traced back to all walks of life, many different religions, many different people with different beliefs. And I just felt like there was an unfair label being placed on Muslims around the world as, the most likely terrorists. And it's just not true.
And there's, I guess I'm putting words in your mouth, but did you feel there's a lacking of people telling stories where American Muslims are the victims, not the terrorists?
I definitely felt there was a lack of that. And it's unfortunately, since that movie came out, you've seen Dylann Roof,
killed. Yeah, he went into a black church, right?
Yeah, and then you saw something recently in Canada, which was a targeted attack against, I believe it was a mosque. You've got Muslims being targeted, especially living in New York City for the last, I guess since 2005, there's sometimes open discrimination against Muslims and against Sikh. And I have a lot of Sikh friends, which are not Muslim, and they get, because sometimes they wear turbans and stuff like that, they get targeted. It's just fucked up. So
I have Sikh friends too, and of course any Sikh, depending on their personal politics, but they'll either laugh or very seriously tell you how Sikhs and Muslims have been killing each other for centuries, that there's really bad blood between Sikhs and Muslims, and the fact that almost all Americans can't tell them apart is just kind of an insult.
The whole thing's insulting, and people forget. I'm from Florida. There's, a lot of blind bigotry really all over the country, but I've just things that I've heard from my own peers, even in recent years, just ignorant labeling of people and an ignorance on history. There's a great documentary that came out this year on Netflix. I'm forgetting the name, but it profiled, the movement that eventually led Timothy McVeigh to bomb, to the Oklahoma City bombing. Timothy McVeigh was a terrorist. He's a white American, maybe he identified as Christian. I don't remember, but that was a massive terror attack. So anyway, long story short, I just thought it was important to make Army of God, and I wanted to play on people's prejudices. As we told the story, and you're following this Muslim father and son, and then you're following the two Catholic boys, and most people are thinking, all right, we know what's going to happen here, and then obviously we switch it up. And it's not to say that there are a bunch of Catholic terrorists out there. It was only the only reason I chose that I placed them in a Catholic setting was just to pick something really kind of what people would view as an opposite.
One of the things I like about it too is you reveal the twist pretty early, right? I mean, you actually have the people with guns confront the young Muslim kid pretty early in your film. It's not like you wait for the last frame to reveal who the masked people are.
Yeah, actually, in the original script, it was sort of a last-minute plot twist, but then we reworked that thing many times to try to tell the story in the right way.
Right, on the page.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I hope some people see it, and it actually got quite a lot of hate when it came out on the VidMe thing. I don't know how many times it was viewed. Maybe like only like 20, maybe 20,000 times. And there were people that you could tell had created accounts just to come on and talk shit.
Like, right. So in other words, some people shared on their social media, there's this anti-whatever. You know, I'm sure people could portray it as anti-Christian, though it's not, or anti-this or anti-American even.
There were some pretty extreme people commenting on there. I'm working on a feature now that I hope to make next year. It's along the same political lines as that, with actually it's religionless. There's no religion mentioned in it whatsoever, but I wanted to pick a topic that was about discrimination. And what I ultimately decided was to do a film about genetically modified humans, because I wanted to pick two people side by side that hate each other, that have no physical or visible differences, no religious differences, no political differences. Just I wanted to pick something that is so minuscule, and then demonstrate how that can still be a source of hate.
Right. So in your own projects, you really do causes in a way that just mean a lot to you.
Yeah, I think that's what films are for. I mean, on one hand, they need to be entertaining, and you know, I'm all about escapism. But also, you know, I hope they, you know, make you think a little bit.
All right. So this new one you're working on, it's more of a sci-fi thing.
It's definitely grounded in sci-fi from a premise point of view, but from a storytelling point of view, it's going to be a thriller.
You're on the right track there, I guess, because most of the truly great sci-fi was making a very real, you know, had a very real message about society and culture that people couldn't handle if you gave it to them set in their world, but they can handle it in another.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, this is based in an alternate present, which I think some TV shows are really doing an incredible job with. I just finished The Handmaid's Tale, which I thought was incredible. And it's just, you know, it's an alternate present set in the same time frame, I believe. And then there's that other one about what if the Nazis and one.
Yeah, the Philip K. Dick. I haven't watched it, but Man in the High Castle, right?
Man in the High Castle. Yeah, I saw the first season. I just love how you know, people are tackling ideas like that, and it's pretty out there in the mainstream.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. That's definitely a purpose of the art.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I guess it's really cool. You're in a great position of your entrepreneurial spirit has you in a position where you're not hustling for your next directing gig. You are doing well running a business, and then, you know, doing what you care about for your own filmmaking career.
For sure. That's a tight, it's a balancing act for sure. I would love to do more and more, be directing more and writing more, but I think I've almost found the balance. So I'll let you know.
And are you a guy who you're really only interested in directing, like what you write, or do you?
No. This latest project, commissioned the script. I'm working with a really great writer, who's, I'm working with a great writer on that. Also worked with another writer on another script. I love producing. So the other feature project I would just be a producer on with Milos. And I love working with other directors. I think, you know, I can honestly say, like, I love producing on its own. I don't care if I've written the script or not when it comes to directing. I think it's a, you know, it's about collaborating.
And so out of curiosity, I mean, at your age, to be so unpossessive about it, what is it just about how it resonates for you personally, whether you want to direct it or be involved as a producer?
Just like good stories. And I also love working with great filmmakers. Like, I'm not the right guy to direct, to have directed our documentary, We Live This. That was directed by this guy, James Burns. He's an incredible documentary filmmaker, credible filmmaker, but he was the right guy to tell that story. That was his story also that he found and started developing and making. Lightning Face, if you see, is by Brian Petzos, who's just like the most unique creative and director. And when you see his work, I couldn't do that. So my directing projects are personal for sure. They're stories that I feel like they need, you know, need to be told. But other people bring us cool stories all the time that I also think should be told. And in those instances, we jump on as producers. And I love being creative producer and sometimes just a purely logistics guy and picking up the phone and, you know, making shit happen and crunching numbers. Like, I honestly enjoy that too.
Right. Well, you're involved at film at all levels, really.
In a small way, for sure. Doing what we can. So really, the thing that can, I think, make or break a short, especially when this came out before Vimeo did a staff pick every week, which even when they do that now is fantastic. But when you get a Vimeo staff pick, which I think we've had like four, you get a lot of exposure. So I know that the Vimeo team, they wrote a nice comment and they were like, nah.
same they were afraid. They were afraid to make that a staff pick.
I don't know. I can't speak to them. I think, you know, I don't know.
It's funny because one of the other guys I interviewed for the podcast whose film was at Film Invasion LA, his was a staff pick. And I think it kicked him like over 200,000 views or something.
Getting a staff pick is a really big deal. When we got one for the one that I directed, The Exit Room, the phone started ringing after. And it had already completed its festival circuit. But then I started getting calls from Lionsgate and Weinstein and, you know, different Weinstein. Gone and buried now, but
yeah, crazy.
The staff pick and short of the week are really powerful tools, I think, when just in terms of getting exposure as a short filmmaker. But I will say that Army of God was my last short, so maybe it'll end up on the Blu-ray bonus one day of some other. Maybe it'll get
you know. Exposure. I think you. That'd be awesome. But yeah, so it'll be the last short. It's features from now on. And it was too hot for a lot of people to handle. It's obvious that this is such a politically divided time that your film is something that people were actually afraid, you know, agree or disagree with the idea behind it. It's a quality film. I guarantee lesser shorts have been shown at every festival that turned you away.
I really appreciate it. You're definitely one of the bigger fans of the movie because it was radio silence for sure.
I confess, it's really weird for me to talk to a guy who I know has made a really great film and a film that's appropriate to the time. I mean, he made a film about terrorism and about an act of terrorism. And he had a fresh take on it, and it's really well made. It's technically good, as well as just a compelling story. But when he told me no film festivals besides Film Invasion LA touched the film, I was shocked. Not trying to toot our own horn, but shame on all the other film festivals for passing on it. Alright, well, if that doesn't make you want to watch Army of God at discoverfilm.net, I don't know what will. So the usual closeout here is go to discoverfilm.net. You can watch a bunch of great shorts there. You can get links to great features there. You can find out about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. You can find out about Film Invasion LA. There's even a link to my website. See you next time. Thanks for listening.